This big, brown, flat, mysterious, crazy country, it's Martin Malloy with McMalloy and Tony Martin.
And today, are the nation's leading comedians and impressionists about to be put out of business by Queensland gun nut Ian McNiven and his eerie John Howard? We'll find out. Also today, the latest on Australia's fat-reducing wonder drug, Robbie Coltrane's follow-up to Cracker, and an exclusive chat with the man who proved the cynics wrong, Russian President Boris Yeltsin. For one final time this week, we'll play Beat the Beasley and Radio Gladiators. We'll dish out the Fumio and wrap up the week in fine style with comedian Steve Bedwell. Yes, it's all coming up on the program where stupidity is the big winner, Martin Malloy. On this week, anyway, with myself, Tony Martin, and this bloke here, a man who's earning a bit of extra cash these days, writing material for both Tim Fisher and Ian McNiven, Mick Malloy.
I don't know where to go next. I think I've peaked too early.
Well, I hope not, because as people in here can see, we've got the monkey suits on, mm-hmm. because it's Friday, and as always, time for the pomp and pageantry of the Fumio. A little ceremony which occurs every week about this time, where we celebrate the achievements and honour the bravery of the individual whose behaviour has supplied us with the most material over the last week. And just like with the Russian elections, alcoholism, incompetence and even death are no handicap, and indeed may well give the nominees, well, an extra leg up in the final go-round. Mick, who's made the final cut?
Greg Norman, who lost a golf tournament for having incorrectly marked balls. This is a departure for Norman, who usually loses by displaying no balls at all.
Ian McNiven, his name had to come up. The Queensland pro-gun extremist who's moved into the entertainment business via an extraordinary impression of the Prime Minister has been so successful he's changing his name to David McNiven and releasing two best-selling autobiographies, Bring On the Empty-Headed Gun Nuts and The Moon's a Balloon, So Let's Blast the Crap Out of It.
Nelson the Dog, who escaped from a Qantas flight and had to be chased around the airstrip. The incident caused some flights to be delayed for up to 1 hour, or, as a Qantas spokesman put it, 7 doggy hours.
Cliff Richard, whose willingness to launch into a medley of his hits whenever torrential rain strikes finally gives drought-stricken Australian farmers something to feel lucky about. But no, by a surprising majority, the Fumio goes to Boris Yeltsin. Yes, the Russian president who says he still wears the pants in that country, and his stunning 54% majority is the proof, which is quite a coincidence because, as we know, Mr. Yeltsin is himself 54% proof.
And Tone, we've got him on the line now. Mr. Yeltsin, can you hear me?
Yes, Mick. Loud and clear.
Congratulations on your election win. You must be celebrating.
What election? Your bloody oath. Why not join me in a victory toast?
Mr. Yeltsin? Mr. Yeltsin?
Oh, dear. Well, while we're here, Mickey, I might just mention Steve Bedwell's coming in.
Excellent. Yeah. Always enjoy a bit of a visit from Steve.
Yep. And Beat the Beasley, we'll be having that.
What are we dropping today? Don't give too much away.
Oh, no, definitely not. Did I mention Steve Bedwell?
Yeah,
I think you did.
Okay.
Any plans for the weekend, Tone? Thought I might pop round to Ian McNiven's place. Fancy dress, you know. Get a bit of material for next week's show.
Could you get my jodhpurs back?
Oh, sure. I'll need to. Mm.
Mr. Yeltsin?
Bartender, I said a double.
Mr. Yeltsin?
Hang on.
Well, that must have put a spring in your step.
Yes. Yes, in fact, I think I'm getting happy feet. Oh, dear! Oh, help! Somebody stop this madness now!
out of you simple minds, don't you forget about me, here at Martin Malloy. And, Mick, I've been reading more about fat drug testing.
Mm.
As you were saying on yesterday's show, Australian scientists are on the verge of a world breakthrough in combating obesity with a new wonder drug. Actually, I think Eddie Murphy may have beaten them to it if you've seen the shorts for the Nutty Professor.
Yep.
Have you seen the shorts for this Nutty Professor?
I have, indeed.
It's a huge monster hit.
Mm.
And it's Eddie Murphy. And it's a remake of the old Jerry Lewis Nutty Professor.
Mm-hmm.
Except that if you remember in that one, which is on every Saturday afternoon, as far as I can tell, he's nutty.
He's nutty.
He's real nutty.
Mm.
He's got nutty teeth.
Mm.
He's got a nutty haircut. He's got a nutty walk. He's got a nutty voice.
Yep.
He drinks the magic potion, and then he's Buddy Love. Smooth bloke. Now, this one, it's just a real fat guy who turns in. Shouldn't it be the Fatty Professor?
Fatty Professor.
There's nothing nutty about him, as far as I can see from the shorts.
No.
It should just be the Fat Professor. But anyway, I'm sure they know what they're doing. And I tell you who'd be feeling like a bit of a dick, and that's David Caruso. This man can't put a foot right. He's left NYPD Blue, hasn't won the Emmy, made a bit of a goog of himself there. He's made two flop movies in a row. And then guess what he's done? He's signed up for the new Eddie Murphy film, which is a cop movie called Metro.
Yeah.
And, of course, Eddie hasn't had a hit for a while.
Yeah.
And out comes Vampire in Brooklyn, massive flop. Caruso's gone, oh, I can't get associated with this bloke. I'm pulling out. I'll go and make some little art film instead. And then, of course, the Nutty Professor's come out and made $25 million in the first hour. And this is what I reckon you'd be hearing round at David Caruso's place. That's all you get on the answering machine if you're calling him up. But getting back to Australia's fat-destroying wonder drug, which at this stage the Melbourne research team is simply calling AOD-9401. Oh, dear, come on, guys, you'll have to do better than that. Nobody's going to be racing down the chemists for something called AOD-9401. You need a name like Fat Be Gone, Lard Away, No More Blubber. Or if it's a device of some sort, they always call it something violent, don't they? It's, you know, the Gut Buster or the Thigh Slapper or the Ass Blaster 2000. You got yourself an Ass Blaster 2000.
Don't go anywhere without it, don't.
But it's going to be quite a while before it's in the shops anyway, because as you reported, they've tested it successfully on mice and rats.
Mm.
The next step is to try it out on sheep and pigs.
Mm.
And what, if they can produce some sort of waif-look porker, they'll then move on to cows and then humans. Gee, there's a real pecking order when it comes to testing new drugs, isn't it?
Yep.
Rats and mice, they can get caught up for anything. Mm. They're down the back in economy. Your pigs and sheep, they're in business. Stuff only comes to them once it's checked out with the rats and mice first.
Yep.
Then up in first class, you've got your cows. They get the stuff off the top shelf, the really good vaccines, and it's always served hot and on proper crockery. But imagine the conversations if you're in the middle, if you're a sheep or pig.
Heard about this new whooping cough vaccine?
Didn't make it past the rats. I was awake all night thanks to those bloody coughing mice. What about the new fat-reducing wonder drug? Heard anything? Yeah, I've seen a lot of very slim ferrets in the last week. I imagine they'll be slipping that in our food any day now. Get ready to have your pants taken in. That's my advice.
Right.
Any word on this new anti-impotence solution? Yeah, I think it must be the good stuff. They've bypassed us completely. I've seen a lot of very embarrassed-looking cows walking around the lab in a sort of half-crouch. Tina Arena here at Martin Malloy.
This week on Martin Malloy, Robbie Coltrane is cake shop owner.
Hi, I'd like one of those vanilla slices in the window.
Oh, I'm sure you would.
Sorry?
You've had your eyes on it for quite a while, haven't you?
Look, I was just...
Every day you walk past this shop and see it sitting there on the shelf looking up at you, mocking you, with its tight little crumbly biscuit base and its delicious vanilla body, and it's looking at you, nobody but you, and it's saying, you're nothing, you'll never be anything, and it makes you feel cheap.
This is...
And you want to get at it, don't you? Show it who's boss. You want to grab that vanilla-flavoured pastry and give it a lesson it'll never forget, don't you?
No, I...
Don't be afraid to talk about it. Now's your chance. It may be the only chance you'll get.
I just want...
Won't? Of course you do. Don't worry, I understand. I've been there. But once you've had that vanilla slice, that won't be the end of it. Oh, no. You'll have to find another and eat again in a desperate attempt to slake your lust. For that's what it is. A nameless craving for confectionery. Pure, clean, unspoiled confectionery, sitting there looking up at you saying, come on, big boy, eat me, eat me.
Listen, listen.
Eat me, come on, treat me rough, I'm asking for it. But it's a cry for help, isn't it? Because deep down, you know that that vanilla slice is just like you. Dirty, disgusting filth, not fit to walk on God's earth.
Look, here's $2, just give me...
Oh, so you don't mind paying for it? Interesting. Does your wife know you live your life this way?
This has nothing to do with...
Of course it doesn't. I'm sure she makes a lovely vanilla slice, but no, you'd much rather slink down here for a bit of the rough stuff.
Right, that's it.
Did your mother make your vanilla slice?
What are you talking...
Oh, now it's starting to add up. Did she make your lamingtons? Did she tell you that if you're a good little boy, you'd get a nice bit of blueberry pie?
Blueberry...
Aye, like the pie in this picture. Look at it. Look at it. It. Unfinished, mutilated, and here's another one, and another. Is that ringing any bells? You sort make me sick, but you know what? Right now, I'm the only friend you've got. That's it. Get it out of your system. Go on, think of me as a giant Pavlova. That's it. Knock the cream out of me. I'm asking for it, aren't I?
Robbie Coltrane, cake shop owner, coming soon.
You'll be back! You'll be back!
Fast love, that's George Michael here at Martin Molloy. We're in the next hour. Steve Bedwell's on board. He'll be helping us wrap up the week. Mm. We just sit back in the comfy chairs and Steve does all the hard work. That's how that...
I've been on the night in some of Steve's segments.
Have you?
No, not because they're not bloody entertaining, but just because it's a chance to put the feet up.
That's right, that's right. It's just a big three-position comfort session for us for that half hour. But also, we've got Beat the Beasley coming up, and yesterday we successfully brained Cliff Richard with a homemade Beasley constructed for us by Adelaide aviating genius, Mr. John Johansson.
John Johansson.
That's right, the man I keep calling Jake. That's in the next hour. We'll be doing something even more spectacular with an effigy of... Can we say anything at all? Let's just say Boris Yeltsin's involved. That'll get him listening.
That's all you need to know, people.
And Radio Gladiator's coming up, but everyone around the office today is talking Ian McNiven. Now, do people know who Ian McNiven is, Mickey?
I think they do. Did you catch his work addressing that gun rally in Gympie?
Right, yeah, I did.
You did. I switched on the telly to see a fully grown man in the full Nazi regalia doing the most piss-weak John Howard impression I've ever seen in my life. In fact, I shouldn't refer to him as Ian McNiven because he was in character as sworn-off little dickhead Jack Boot Johnny.
And that's his own title.
That's his own title. He made that up all by himself. Did you see him in the get-up, Tony? He was wearing a black uniform with a red tie, swastika armbands, and, well, how would you describe his footwear?
Well, it's gumboots.
It's gumboots.
I've got a photo here, and it's definitely gumboots. I thought it was Jackboot Johnny, not Gumboot Johnny.
Sort of little dickhead. Gumboot Johnny. Gumboots. Well, probably appropriate. I mean, who could ever forget the way the Nazis marched through Germany in the old gumboots? Remember all that footage of Cliffy Young running around the paddock in a pair of gumbies? I reckon he must have been on the run from those Nazi hunters who were trying to track him down and prosecute him for war crimes. Now, look, for those of you who haven't seen the footage, McNiven employed all his chameleon-like skills to take on the persona of Jackboot Johnny and basically just swaggered around the stage, delivered Nazi salutes, and denigrated John Howard in front of about 120 people, some of whom walked out in disgust when he refused continued requests to do his Greek fruiterer character. Wouldn't do it. No, just wouldn't do it. Had a quick go at that poofy bloke from Are You Being Served, you know, the old, I'm free, but nah, wouldn't do the Greek fruiterer.
Could he muster up a Frank Spencer?
He did a quick Betty.
How would Ian McNiven go on Red Faces, do you think?
Oh, well, it's funny you should say that, Tone, because when I turned on the telly, I was actually expecting to see a bit of news, but it actually looked like I'd come in on one of those best and worst of Red Faces. Dear. I'm looking at it for a couple of minutes, watching, and I'm thinking, geez, why isn't Red gonged him? Geez, Blackers is quiet tonight, isn't he? But no, it didn't happen. If one of those blokes from Hale and Pace ever gets sick, McNiven could just get that big break he's been looking for. Tone, I've actually been working on an impersonation of my own.
Yeah.
It's of Ian McNiven.
Oh, of Ian McNiven.
Of Ian McNiven himself. Would you like to be part of it?
Yeah, how do I do that?
Well, for a start, you've just got to get in this giant pantomime ass costume with me.
Sure, be happy to, Mickey.
Now, do you want to be the left buttock or the right?
I'll take the left.
Okie dokie. Yeah.
Okay, right. Are you in?
Yeah.
Okay, on the count of three.
Right.
One, two, three.
Adult delinquents, they smell bad. They use foul language. They've already wrecked our party. Now you've got to get them out of here right now.
Welcome back to Martin Malloy, where, yes, it's your opportunity to come down to our level.
Radio Gladiators, your chance to represent your state and win fame, glory, and fabulous prizes. Here's today's challenge.
Mick, we've had a few faxes and calls and requests to do one we did last week, and that is we were talking about that book. What is it? Men Are From Venus?
Women Are From Pluto.
Something like that.
I think that was it.
I think at least one word is correct in that title. But it's the book by, I think, a man called John Gray, where he talks about differences between men and women. Not the obvious ones, the more subtle behavioural ones. And we were talking about this last week, and people are saying, why not do that again, because I want to have a crack at it.
We've been inundated with requests.
Now, I've been keeping an eye out for them, and here's one that happened to me on the weekend. Yep. As you know, we've got the big Martin Malloy website up and running, so I thought it's time for me to dive in and find out what the internet's all about. So we've gone around to a friend's place who's got it wired up, and when you watch your girlfriend get on the internet, it's quite different from what the bloke might do, because she's on there looking up sensible things, you know, the search. You get on the net search engine, whatever it is, and you go, oh, I want to find something about I don't know, interesting stuff, music, films, and I'm just putting rude words into it. It's like an advanced version of looking through the dictionary when you're 10 years old looking for farts. It's like that. I was just putting in any old rude word I could come up with. And I thought, there's a subtle difference between your men and women.
I like it a lot. Here's one, and here's one that a few people would probably be aware of. But, I consider this to be a difference. You won't get a bloke who's turning up to a party cracking a spaz because another bloke at that party is wearing exactly the same outfit.
No.
And that's just women, isn't it? Because if a woman walks in and someone's wearing the exact same dress, get yourself out of there quick as you can.
Oh,
because you are not going to hear the end of it.
No, it's like Twister, isn't it? All of a sudden, the whole room's in turmoil.
Oi, oi, oi. Blokes don't do that.
No.
You see another bloke on the other side of the room wearing a pair of acid-washed jeans and a kind of foolish off-duty cop kind of shirt. And you go, oh, that's all right. I don't feel threatened at all.
It's cause for celebration.
There you go.
That's right. Hey, Damo!
I'm blending in.
Nice selection, the old number 4B.
Well done.
And here's another one. Women and men tend to watch Beavis and Butthead differently.
I do that.
Well, at my house they do. The man, that'd be me, giggling like a schoolgirl. The woman grabbing the TV weak.
grabbing the remote.
You're supposed to be some kind of sophisticated humorist, aren't you?
Yeah. Here's something else I've noticed. The size of armpit stones.
Oh, really?
No, and women get armpit stains just like men, but they're always about the size of a 20-cent piece.
Yeah.
Whereas your bloke,
he's
got that coming right down the side of his... Looks like he's got a two-tone shirt on.
Yeah.
Looks like it's just... It's aping right down to his hips.
It's like that big shadow that's going over Washington in the trailer for Independence Day.
It's just
there
on the
spread.
It's on the move.
Pavarotti style. And, of course, our producer Gracie was pointing out, you know, shopping. Obviously, making a shopping list can be different because when I get out the shopping list, it's snack foods at the top. All that other, you know, important stuff, just committed to memory, basically. CCs, Tim Tams, important gear.
You've got it covered.
Now, somebody has sent us a fabulous fax. I'll name him. He is, in fact, Andy Jager, who's the training specialist at Hewlett-Packard, and he employs this kind of stuff at work. He's running seminars. I don't know if he really is or whether this is a gag thing, but let's assume that he's bona fide. And he's got seminars for men. The topics, well, of course, it always starts with the remote. The remote control, overcoming your dependency. Real men ask for directions. Parenting, no, it doesn't end with conception. How to fill an ice cube tray. We do not want sleazy under things for Christmas. Give us money. And one of his more popular ones, honest, you don't look like Mel Gibson, especially when naked. And he's running seminars for women. Let's see what he's got for the ladies. He's got the remote control, don't touch what you can't handle. He's got avoiding walking in front of the TV. Most of the, they seem to send around the telly, these seminars. Yeah. And, of course, learning to choose what to wear in less than 4 hours. So it's a bit generalised, but that's what we're chasing, isn't
that's
it?
That's what we want.
All right, and what have we got for the listeners? What incentive do we have? Step into the prize lounge, if you will, for a moment. As I inform you, we have tickets for you and a friend to see John Farnham live in concert. We've got a Martin Malloy T-shirt. It's unisex. Plus, you'll go into the drawer for that trip for two, staying at the fabulous four-star Port Douglas Treetops. You're in the safe hands of Dougie T himself. You're flying Ansett Airlines. You're staying 7 nights. And guess what? We're drawing it in about 15 minutes.
Yes.
At the conclusion of this segment, call us up with your subtle behavioural differences between men and women. 1-800-657-657. Clean, Dion, because you love me here at Martin Malloy. It's Radio Gladiators. And today, once again, we're talking about the subtle behavioural differences between women and men. There's one right there. I expect our women much more keen to go and see the film what that song comes from.
Which is?
I don't know.
Well, there you go. That's we rest our case.
I don't know what it is. We've talked about this before. It's the one with Michelle Pfeiffer running around with her granddad.
Up close and craggy.
Yeah, I think that's it. All right, let's maybe introduce the listeners. Who's got something to say today? Mickey.
Young man named Anthony. I'd like to kick things off. G'day, Anthony. How are you?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Now, you'd be an observationalist from way back in your travels. What have you come across in the way of a subtle difference between men and women?
Women's love of junk mail. Oh. They thrive on it, and I hate it.
Oh, I see. And what do you do with the junk mail yourself, Anthony? Straighten the bin? Does it even make it to the front door?
Look, well, if there's a Liquorland or something like that with a beer special, it's got to be put in its place.
Oh, well, that's, you read that from cover to cover, don't you?
That's literature.
That's on the bestseller list.
Wear ads you've got. That's price of rump steak. Yeah. What sort of life do you have to lead to be interested in it?
Oh, well,
what sort of oxygen thief do you have to be?
I know a lot of men who are pretty keen to check if the bra shop catalogue's in there.
Yeah, but you get that out before your missus sees.
Oh, I see.
You put it under the, secret
some spot. People have them in binders, like those week-by-week kind of deals. But,
you've been to my place.
And, Anthony, do you go the no junk mail please sign?
Well, we haven't put it up yet.
How useless is that sign?
My wife just loves it.
It's
the most ignored piece of literature ever penned.
If you're delivering junk mail and you see no junk mail, please, that means 7 or 8 will go in there if I stay here long enough with a stick. Okay, thanks, Anthony. There's a good one to kick off with. Who's next?
It's a young lady named Margaret. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you? What have you noted? What's the diff?
Well, women do not sit on the edge of the bed cross-legged and bite their toenails off.
Oh, really? And men do?
Yes, they certainly do.
Round at your place, hang on, bite their toenails off. Are you married to a contortionist or?
No, not married to one, but my brother is, certainly. Oh. It's disgusting.
Your brother is married to a bloke who sits on the end of the bed and bites his toenails off.
He bites his toenails? Have you ever tried this? I'm very keen.
Yes, I have, Tone, but I want to stress it was on top of the doona, not under. Under the doona, that's going too far. But on top, hey, go for your life.
And you don't swallow them, of course. That's where you draw the
not
line.
Not at all.
All right,
not
Margaret.
All. You go to spit.
All right, thanks, Margaret. That's a beauty. And now we've got Cliff. Cliff, what is your subtle difference?
G'day, guys.
What do you got for us, Cliff?
Well, listen, mate, I want to talk about the correlation between women's clothes and mirrors.
Oh, yes.
Well, we get in front of the mirror, comb our hair, get dressed and walk away.
Ready to go.
Yeah. No, well, not my wife. She depends what mirror she's at. Yeah. It's like one of those chips. The bathroom one's all right.
Yeah.
But the bedroom one, mate, it's as if you're looking at one of those circus mirrors, she goes off.
I have that too. The old fun park mirror.
Oh, mate.
Okay, you're seeing something I'm not seeing. That's looking
that's
fine
right.
to me.
The problem is I say something nice and, it's the wrong thing to do.
Oh, yes.
If I don't say anything at all, it's the wrong thing. I can't win, mate.
But I'm sure all that behaviour is intended for your benefit, Cliffy.
I guess it must be. I haven't quite worked out how, though.
Okay, well, that's one. Okay, we've come across that a few times. But what's Gail got to tell us about? Gail?
Yeah, hi. I found that men seem to be more wimpy when they get hurt. Oh, okay.
Yes. Tell us about a recent example that's happened to you, Gail.
I have actually, yeah. My husband, he sprained his ankle a little bit, taking out some compost.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, my ankle, it's really sore. I've got to go and see the doctor. So he trots off to the doctor, and the doctor's a man too.
Yeah.
Tells him, oh, you must keep it warm and wrapped up, and you must keep it elevated, and don't get on it all day, and, right. you know, not to stand on it or anything. Whereas, for example, my grandmother nearly cuts her finger off cutting the veggies, and she says, oh, it's just cut. Put a Band-Aid on it.
You know, when you fish it out of the salad bowl, she goes, don't, it won't hurt you. It's just a finger. Just a cut, Eat up, young man.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure this is a universal phenomenon, Gail. I'm sure around at Arnold Schwarzenegger's place, you'll often hear him going, oh, paper cut.
Yeah.
I can't do any filming today.
Got to rest it all day and don't lean on it or anything.
All right, thanks, Gail. That's a beauty. And now we're talking to Scott. What has Scott got to say, Scotty?
How are you guys?
What do you got for us?
You ever notice how guys always have to drive the car?
Oh, yeah. And what do you think the explanation is?
I don't know. I just remember as a little kid driving up the coast and 15 hours behind the wheel and it'd be, I'm all right, and Mum would be in the passenger seat and they'd just be Dad in that right-hand position.
And why do you think it is? Do you think it's because Mum didn't want to drive or Dad didn't want Mum to drive?
Second option, guys.
Second option. You think Dad just wanted the wheel.
And that, of course, leaves Mum with the map folding duties, which is probably good.
And but leaning over and slapping the kids.
Right. And is it because, does it go back to caveman times? Is it the hunter instinct? Does it have to be there? Of course,
yeah,
men.
It was always the men who drove the woolly mammoth. It was always him at the ears.
And, of course, men know where the next drive-through is. They've got that surgically implanted in the brain.
Very important.
That's very important.
Definitely.
Okay, thanks, Scott. And we're talking to Paul now. Paul, what's your subtle diff?
You notice how guys, they buy their clothes and they tend to wear them until they're falling off. They're in shreds and stuff. And women can't be seen in public, you know, more than five times in the same outfit.
Right, yes. That's right. Men will survive a bomb blast and come out with a shredded pair of tracky dacks and go, oh, there's still another good week in them.
Right.
These will be back in style any day now.
And what are you wearing now, Paul?
I've got some tracksuit pants with holes in them.
Yeah, how long you had them?
About 2 years.
Well, what colour are we talking? Royal blue with three stripes?
Nah, just blue, mate.
Oh, very nice. A couple more years in them, wouldn't it?
About two more.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. You're a living example of your own formula. Now, finally, we've just got time to talk to Donna. Donna, what's your difference?
Yes, it's something I'll never be able to understand, why men have to read in the toilet when they go for number two.
Well, not reading junk mail.
A bit of reading material. And what kind of reading material gets used around at your place?
Well, just the newspaper or whatever magazines are lying around.
You know, I got through half of the Unabomber Manifesto.
I did, in one sitting.
But I don't understand what you're waiting for.
I see.
In inspiration, I suppose.
Oh, well, fair enough.
Job by job, it builds into a fountain of knowledge.
But
that's how it works,
difference.
I understand. Okay, well, is that our winner? That's obviously a beauty. But I don't know, we're sitting on a whole cachet of gold there.
I like them all times, but, so, you know.
What about the wussiness, obviously? But I think the reading material of the toilet.
I think it's the best.
Okay, thanks, Donna.
Thank you.
Well, firstly, you got the tickets to see John Farnham.
Oh, great.
And you've got the Martin Malloy T-shirt.
Even better.
Yeah, very nice bit of acting. And, of course, you've got into the drawer for the trip to the Port Douglas treetops.
Terrific.
Who's that in the background?
That's my bubba.
And, okay, you're going to take the bubba to the treetops if you come out of the barrel?
No way.
Because we're just writing your name on a piece of paper now. It's going into the barrel. Our assistant Emma is reaching in. And from the five gladiators who were successful this week, who's our winner, Em?
Wayne Cook from Cessnock in New South Wales.
Wayne Cook. Cookie. Cessnock Cookie. Get on you, Cookie. And what was Wayne involved with? Oh, he was the man who yesterday wanted to see baby John Burgess providing a bit of rain delays play style entertainment at Wimbledon.
Well, it's paid off for him, hasn't it?
Okay, Wayne. Well, you're heading to the Port Douglas treetops. Say hello to Dougie T for us. You'll be staying seven nights flying ANZ. And sorry about you, Donna. You've still got the other prizes, though.
Yep, terrific. Thank you very much.
Thanks for taking part. And time for you to go and change the reading material in the smallest room, I think, now.
Her husband's down the library.
As we speak, stocking up for the weekend. All right, thanks to everybody who took part in Radio Gladiators, and we'll be back in the next hour with, well, he's a bloke. I'm sure of that. He's Steve Bedwell.
This is Martin Malloy. brought to you by absolutely nobody.
And in this hour of the freshly crimped Martin Molloy, we'll play Beat the Beasley. We'll encourage you to throw stuff away once again. And next up, we'll run a make on the week that was with the assistance of Steve Bedwell.
Introduce our guest, and every 3 or 4 weeks, Mick and I get to sit back and let somebody else do the hard work. Join us as we get the events of the past week up on blocks and see if we can find out where the trouble started with the assistance of our Adelaide connection, Steve Bedwell.
Hey. Steve, how are you?
Very well. And you could sell.
Not too bad, although we've just survived another Gladiators, and I couldn't help but notice you were paying attention quite closely. Differences between men and women. Got any for us?
Yeah, Franklin mint plates.
Yeah.
Women just go crazy for your Franklin mint plate. And I think Franklin mint have worked this out. Because as I go to the latest plate catalogue, I go past your Anne Hathaway's cottage, your flowers. I go past your film stars, your beautiful American Indian business.
Yeah.
I find myself at the back and I see the plate of Coleridge's Dogs Playing Poker.
Oh,
it's on a plate.
It's about time.
It's on a plate. And I've rung up and ordered it today.
Yeah.
Right. And I've said to the woman, get me an ace in the hole, which is actually that pitcher's proper title. And she's gone, you know, there'll be six in the series. And I said, just sign me up.
Right. So you got the dog. What will be the others in the series?
You'll get your dogs playing snooker, pool. You'll get your dog, in the shed.
You'll get your
dog making a bookcase.
You'll get your skeleton sitting on the toilet, I imagine.
You'll get your dog walking up to the tennis net in a very short skirt and just showing one buttock and picking up a ball.
Very alluring. Very alluring. But what's going on? What's really caught your attention now?
Well, Clifford the tennis.
Yeah.
What's going on there? You know what I mean? Who is he kidding? If I dole out my hard-earned lolly to go and see tennis, that's what I want.
Oh, yeah.
Tennis. Not some washed-up old clack who just because he's got a knighthood, reckons he can jump up and have a warble anytime he feels like it. And this is what I reckon. Sure, it starts with the rain delays. But mark my words, if we don't nip this in the bud now, next year he'll be banging out a couple of choruses of Devil Woman every time there's a change of end. Stop him.
From the central court umpire's position. He'll be up in the chair with the microphone.
Oh, yeah, he'll be there. And you know what the sad part is? He got away with it because he's Sir Cliff Richard.
Oh, yes.
If Lemmy from Motorhead had tried that, he would have been handcuffed and in the back of a divvy van before he had the opportunity to get out the first line of Ace of Spades. They'd have just had him.
And would Martina Navratilova be jumping in with a bit of air guitar?
No way.
So.
Maybe Andre Agassi, and that was the best you could expect. Now, who does Cliff think he is? You can bet your life he wouldn't be too happy if during a concert while he's off getting changed, John Newcomb decided to keep the crowd amused with a bit of totem tennis. He wouldn't see any big smiles on his face. You know, but having former stars of the host country just start singing unprovoked during delays in play.
Oh, dear.
You know, what's going to happen with that? Will it catch on?
Oh,
I reckon that I could probably cop Maurice Chevalier's rendition of Thank Heavens for Little Girls during interruption at Roland Garros.
Sure.
But I, for one, I'm happy to draw the line at Marty Roan giving us a bit of denim and lace while we wait for the roof to shut at Flinders Park.
It's just going to encourage them all, isn't it, Steve?
And then while he's singing, some poor kitty is innocently mowed down while the covers are coming across
now,
the court.
Is this true? You were telling us about it. I didn't see it on the news. What happened exactly?
Well, they're unfortunately clad, as we know, the ball kitties at Wimbledon in purple and green.
Right.
It's the only place you can get away with that. unless you play for Fremantle.
Sure.
And I noticed that they've pulled the covers across and he's fallen down and not been noticed. Unconscious, whacked on the head with a bit of wood.
Right.
And it's come across and Cliff's singing. And somebody's gone, oh, there's a bit of a lump in the covers. We better go tread that down. Oh! And so they've uncovered it. He's come out and been carried off in a stretcher, the little kitty.
They've pulled him out.
they've rescued him.
If I was on the rescue team, before I pulled him out, I would have jumped under and giving him a quick Dutch oven.
Just that subtle ripple going across the court.
Absolutely. And what was Sir Cliff doing during all this?
Living doll.
He's just singing along.
Got myself a knocked out, sleepy, badly bruised and unconscious kitty.
Was he just going on like that?
Just like that. Except nowhere near as relevant.
I see. All right. Well, enough about Cliff, I think.
Well,
he'd slept under there all night because he heard Cliff Richard was going to be singing.
And
the weird
part was somebody jumped out with a pair of scissors and saw it as the perfect template for a fish suit.
Of course they did. Now, what else have we been talking about on the show, Mickey?
We had a bit of doggy news.
Oh,
you heard about that dog,
man.
Nelson?
Nelson the dog.
The runaway dog at the
fantastic
airport.
Fantastic. Well, tell me if you're a dog and you've got this big expanse in front of you and your cage pops open, you're not going to sit there and say, yeah, put me back in the cage, thanks.
No, that's the green light. Cage door open. See ya.
Chasing the hubcaps on the Concorde.
Well, I know you're going to find this hard to believe because it's normally such a clean sport, but there's been a bit of scandal in greyhound racing circles this week.
Hey, there?
Oh, when stewards, of course, and what a beautiful man your greyhound steward is. You know, isn't that a job to aspire to?
And quite a fashion plate, usually, too. Mm.
They become your steward when they're too old to walk them, which is a fair age. It took a urine sample from well-credentialed dish licker Hugh Blue. Oh, they got a bit more than they bargained for.
Did they?
The sample in question was, of course, taken in April after a meeting at Singleton, of course, in the beautiful Hunter Valley up there Newcastle way, the home of the dogs, and tested at the Australian Jockey Club's high-tech PP analysis facility in Sydney. Now, Hugh Blue's sample was found to contain a volatile cocktail of drugs enough to, in fact, to, quote, have the dog believing he was Robert Downey Jr. The drugs included the local anesthetics protane and tetracaine, caffeine, amphetamines, and the recreational drug cocaine.
Really?
Now, do you think that an animal which bites the water when you hose would have any concept of what a recreational drug is? Just amazing. The AJC also revealed that the sample was not Hugh Blue's at all. It was human.
Oh, no.
Yes, human. Somebody had swapped a sample of their own urine for a sample of the dogs. Now, how could you ever think you could possibly get away with that? And more importantly, what must they have actually given the poor Hugh Blue if, when asked for a sample, the caffeine, amphetamine and cocaine-using culprit decided that his urine was going to be cleaner than the dog's?
Oh, dear.
What did they give the dog? What is the world coming to when they're giving drugs to greyhounds? It sickens me. Mick, you're a big grey. You're a dog man.
I'm a dog man from way back, mate. That's the weirdest. I think that's my dog.
Whatever happened to the good old days when if you wanted that bit extra from your dog, you'd simply load him into the starting box and just before he jumped, you'd dip your finger in a jar a hot English mustard and smear on his date. That's how you used to get him going.
Those were the days.
Oh, I miss those days.
They streaked past that rabbit. The lure's long behind.
I'll tell you what, when another dog goes for a sniff post-race, they're in for a shot too. But switching urine with a dog, you know, I bet Scott Volkers wishes he'd have thought of that. The international hearing for Sam Riley could have been very, very different. Ms. Riley, you've tested negative to banned substances enhancing your performance. But, gee, you'll be in real strife if you don't get yourself wormed soon.
Okay. Well, the good news is, Steve, I understand that dog is understudying for the lead role in Rocky Horror over in Perth at the moment, so it's got a happy ending. Steve, can you stick around for another break?
Try and stop me.
All right, that'll be next. I'm Martin Malloy. Steve Bedwell is with us on the panel today, and there's been a bit more doggy talk during the break.
Man.
Luke, can I tell you something? Have you seen... and this is related to the greyhound industry, trust me. There's a series of ads on TV at the moment for something called The Advisor.
Oh,
right,
yes.
Right now, and I don't know if this is all states, but it's in about six chapters. There's six different ads, and it all revolves around this one kind of enigmatic dead bloke who keeps turning up and looking all wise in the background while everyone goes about the business. But he is the same bloke who fronts the greyhound industry ad, and you may have seen this, and he's like dustman's coat. He's this craggy old bastard, and he stands there going, okay, get along to the greyhounds, lads. You can win lots of good stuff. And he holds up this gold watch he's wearing. Yeah, the greyhounds. I'm thinking, yeah, well, there's the advisor's investment advice down the shit route. What's all that
about? My grandfather.
They've got seen the guy in the greyhound ad and gone, yeah, let's get him to front our a full-on investment campaign. That's what we're looking for.
My grandfather's got photos from Sydney when he was young of the greyhounds when they had monkey jockeys.
Oh, really?
He used to put monkeys on these dogs' back, and a monkey would just be hanging on like for grim death. And the really good part about it is just for like 2 minutes, that horse gets to imagine it's a, dog gets to imagine it's a horse. Did I back that up?
Not at all.
I ruined it anymore.
Bring back the monkey jockeys, I say, but is that what's going on in Adelaide? Tell us what's happening in Adelaide and indeed in South Australia that we need to know about, Steve.
Adelaide's a place, they are in desperate need of monkey jockeys.
Yeah.
Because shooting galleries could disappear from the Royal Adelaide Show because of the raging debate debate over. Have you touched on this?
Oh, we've mentioned it.
Do you want
briefly.
Me to tear it up?
No, keep going.
You know, tell me if we're going down the same road, because easily turn off and get a sandwich.
We got a few obvious gun lobby comparison gags out of it, but...
In that case, we could be in real strife. The show organisers, they're concerned about whether the public, of course, will continue to accept the galleries as family entertainment.
Right.
Now, your Adelaide shows, like any other agricultural or horticultural show around the country for people who haven't been to it. And given that, I reckon that shooting galleries are there, you know, and their effect on the minds of kiddies are the least of their problems, really.
Yeah, there's a lot else going on, isn't there?
Well, I pick on shooting galleries when the true merchants of evil are still allowed, nay, encouraged to peddle their destructive wear. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Oversized inflatable baseball bats.
Oh,
and those plastic trumpets.
It's been going on for too long.
Man, those things and the family arguments they cause, they're responsible for the deterioration of our social fabric, not some kiddie taking pot shots at lead ducks with a slug gun. What's next? We'll ban the Dodgem cars in an attempt to lower the road toll? It's about as tenuous a link as you can get. And you can't tell me that squeezing off a few rounds at miniature metal mallards in an attempt to win a Spider-Man mask is going to cause as much mental anguish to your child as 15 minutes spent stumbling around blindly in the ghost train. If you're really serious about tidying up the image of the Royal Show and weeding out the ne'er-do-wells, look no further than the statistics. I don't know of any infant who has ever suffered an injury as a result of their elder sibling spending a couple of bucks at the shooting gallery.
No.
But year in, year out, hundreds of toddlers, their faces grotesquely painted, needlessly choke on table tennis balls as their desperately addicted older brothers or sister try to recreate the laughing clowns at home.
And what are people doing about it? Nothing. No marches.
They're just saying,
nothing.
Get rid of the guns.
Those shooting galleries, those guns don't need to be crimped. They just need the barrels straightened. Have you seen them? Those barrels have got a mind of their own. I didn't know whether I was using a shooting gallery gun or playing a trombone at one stage.
That's right.
You can... uncurled. It was longer than one of those French horns.
You can fire a gun at the Royal Adelaide Show and hit a target at the Brisbane Royal Show, I'm telling you. I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, you know, every kid, you had a mini bike and a slug gun and you used to fire at each other going across the yard.
It's just all part of... In the bicycle helmets. There's some protection.
You can't hurt yourself with a slug gun.
Now, what else is happening, Steve?
Well, turning your toads, of course, is the call in South Australia at the moment. Another cane toad was discovered there. Less than a fortnight after one of the varmints was found at Victor.
Sure.
The cane toads are being brought to South Australia evidently as pets. They'll sit, stay, spit the lot. By people returning from holidays in Queensland. So the state government has declared a one-month amnesty for people to turn in their toads. You can take your toad to the nearest police station and hand it in and no questions will be asked.
Right.
All collected toads will, of course, be destroyed. But we all know amnesties don't work. You know, some people just aren't going to hand in their toads. And let's face it, if some madman wants to get his hands on an illegal toad, he'll get it. The proposed banning of all toads, of course, has met universal approval from the anti-amphibian lobby. This gun business, every time something's banned, haven't we all just, like, gone down the same road on whatever it is that happens to be banned?
See you there.
Of course, they strongly support the toad buyback scheme as well as crimping of all collectible and antique toads, et cetera, et cetera. You know, toads don't kill flies, spiders kill flies, et cetera, et cetera. Something's banned, let's go the gun lobby road. Now...
He's the only guy I know who drops a bit of comedy and provides his own critique at the same time. It's really a class act.
He bags himself. He's like Greg Norman with his legal ball. As I was going through that then, I thought, by jingos, anything that's banned, you know, cream pies, balloon animals, a lot. There's going to be an anti-lobby and there's going to be an amnesty and there's going to be crimping.
Eggs, that's right. Just enjoy it while you can, Steve.
It won't be there forever.
No. And one final topic, bit of a tidbit.
Well, it's a sad piece, really. I found myself a bit hooked on gladiators.
Oh, really?
I love gladiators, and now Blade's broken her back. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I'm not proud of this, but I'm big enough to admit that I have a problem with the gladiators.
It's happened.
Well, you know how it goes. You're at a party. Someone puts on an old tape of Almost Anything Goes. Everyone's watching it, you know, so you sneak a peek yourself because you're convinced that you're strong.
Yeah.
You know, and sure, it's good, but you can stop any time you want, right?
Yeah.
Well, you can't.
No.
Suddenly, Almost Anything Goes isn't enough, and you move on to It's a Knockout.
Oh, not It's a Knockout.
And when you're in, and that's when the trouble really starts. Before you know it, your life's just a daze of Billy J. Smith and the wives of Rotarians playing their jokers. Before you know it, you're onto the hard stuff and gladiators. But enough of my problems. A couple of weeks ago, there was a male challenger on the show named Daniel.
Oh, yes.
Now, it might sound outwardly, he seemed much the same as other male challengers. You know, too much regard for the state of his own body. Mm. Overinflated opinion of his general importance in the scheme of things. Mm. And propensity for exaggeration as to the mental complexity of the tasks at hand.
Okay.
But there was something very special about Daniel.
What made him stand out?
Well, it's my opinion that Daniel may have taken the whole gladiator's experience a little too seriously. You see, in an effort to gain an advantage over his opposition, he virtually constructed a whole eliminator course in his own shed. Travelator, cargo net, rope climb, balance beam, the lot. He'd even pulled apart his wife's old exercise bike and hung it from the roof to simulate the hand cycle. Daniel, mate, you care a bit too much. Even scarier, though, than the thought of Daniel late at night alone in the dimly lit shed tinkering away on his equipment clad only in an ill-fitting leotard, they told me I was mad style, was the reaction of my gladiator's viewing companion when Mike Hammond told us about Daniel's handiwork. With genuine concern for fair play, she asked, "Is that allowed?" At first I laughed, you know, as you would, and I began to wonder, is it allowed? Is this fair? Yeah, sure. What if this admitting to practicing at home trend begins to invade other game shows? No one would have raised an eyebrow if a contestant on Supermarket Sweep was to admit they, you know, ducked down to Safeway once a week. Dixie couldn't care less if someone on Family Feud fessed up to constant bickering with their brother. So why should we care that Daniel erected a cross between a home gym and a bondage chamber in the privacy of his own shed? I'll tell you why. Because it's the thin edge of the wedge. That's why. Because before we know it, everyone will be doing it. People will be hocking their valuables to raise money to cobble up some crude chipboard recreation of the wheel from Wheel of Fortune in their spare room while their kiddies starve.
I think baby John's got one going in his place, man. Right now.
Mark my words, it's going to happen. Oh, yeah. It's happened before. Let's not kid ourselves. I don't think anyone will forget the run on cheap Radio Shack electrical parts and R2-D2 models as people desperately tried to build perfect matches Dexter at home.
Oh, yes.
No one's immune. You know, I've spent 10 grand on an in-ground pool trying to win Man-O-Man myself. And just as a matter of interest, Daniel lost.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, that was the only joy in the whole thing.
There's
he
a
lost.
Moral to it. Yeah. So the bloke who just strolled up won.
Cheeks never proper.
Okay.
That thing.
Well, Steve, if you're obsessed with gladiators, you've come to the right show. Because we're talking gladiators today because...
It's time to play Beat the Beasley. Here's how it works. Mick and Tony have commissioned the nation's finest designers, engineers and craftsmen to construct several frighteningly lifelike replicas of Federal Opposition Leader Kim Beazley. Every day on Martin Malloy, one of these enormous structures will be dropped onto something fragile, tiny or defenseless. That is, unless you can correctly answer five questions and beat the Beazley. If you're successful, you'll win a Sanyo Olympic Home Entertainment package, including a Sanyo widescreen TV, sports review VCR, enough pizza and coke to get you through the games, and a cleaner to come to your place and deal with the aftermath. Okay, lads, roll out the Beasley.
Yes, indeed. We'd be happy to do just that, Pete Smith. And, Steve, I don't know if you've seen this today, but there's been a celebrity boating accident.
I shouldn't laugh.
No, you shouldn't laugh, but it is bloody funny. Because Tornado from the Gladiators has driven his boat into America's Cup yachtsman Ian Murray. It's not funny at all. We shouldn't be laughing.
Is he the bloke who sank one off the coast of America?
Yeah.
And what's he done now? I bailed the bloke on the Yarra.
I don't think Tornado was involved in that mishap.
He's the Kookaburra boy, Ian Murray. That's right, the Kookaburra boy. And he's been knocked out by his
Danny DeMere, who is all right, you'll be pleased to hear. Mm. He was knocked out for 20 minutes by the pointy bit at the front of Tornado's boat.
Not often you can say I got hit in the head with a speedboat, but I'll be all right.
No, it makes for a good story afterwards.
I might have to lie down for a couple of days, but I'm expecting to be fine after that.
I'll just run my head under a cold tap. Oh, don't worry about me.
But the good news is we've secured the services of one Tornado. He's going to drive our Beasley today.
Is he really?
It's a speedboat-shaped Beasley replica. And what are we going to drop it onto, Mickey?
Well, let me have a think about it. What we might do is drop it onto Boris Yeltsin's liquor cabinet.
Why not?
How does that sound?
It's as good a celebration because of Boris's victory as any that I've heard of. And, Steve, I think you probably don't want to stick around for this ugliness.
I'm gone, gents.
Thanks for...
any senseless destruction of grog, and I can't stick around to hear that.
All right, it's not going to be pretty, and you can be involved, listeners. Just a few simple questions. We won't take up too much of your time. Call us now, 1-800-657-657.
This is Martin Malloy.
I can give you no authoritative information, either as to their nature, their origin, or their purposes here on Earth.
It's time to beat the Beasley. Of course it is, here at Martin Malloy. Today we have constructed a Beasley. Well, it's speedboat-like. It's still a proper Beasley, but it's certainly speedboat-like, and naturally it's being driven by Tornado from the Gladiators. Engineer of a speedboat accident just yesterday, I think. Celebrity speedboat accident,
absolutely.
Of course. And we're going to drop it onto Boris Yeltsin's liquor cabinet. It's a massive structure in itself. And hanging in the balance is, of course, the Sanyo Olympic prize pack. We're talking widescreen telly. We're talking Sports Review VCR. We're talking pizza and Coke. It was coming out as one.
As much
there.
As you want.
It's Poke. Let's just call it a big pack of Poke.
And they'll bloody come in and clean up afterwards.
That's right. We've got a cleaner waiting in the wings to take care of the mess. And who's in line for this fabulous Sanyo prize, Mickey?
It's Len. How are you, Len?
Great. And yourself?
Great. Seem pretty laid back, mate.
Trying to be. It's Friday.
You're kicking back on the couch, are you?
Not quite.
All right.
Whereabouts are you? Where are you calling us from, Len? From work?
No, from home.
Right. And what do you do for a job, Len?
I'm a sparky electrician.
Oh, right. Okay. So we might
a
be...
A bright spark.
We probably need your services on this segment. There's been a few near fatalities during the week.
Really?
And we'll be calling you in if it goes wrong today. But you know how it works, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And the Beasley is right now being craned into position. We've got a few bloody simple questions for you. When you hear the gunshot, they'll be coming your way.
Good luck, Len.
Thank you.
Okay, here we go. Fire it off. Oh, and who did Tim Fisher suggest had embarked on a series of vodka benders?
Boris Yeltsin.
Yes!
Name two gladiators.
Storm and Hammer.
Yes!
Yes! Name one of Paulie Yates and Bob Geldof's children.
Sky?
Oh, pretty close. I'm afraid not. Name a decent Australian sitcom.
There is one.
I think that's it. That's the correct answer. Name one of the bananas in pyjamas.
B1?
Yes. Name the other one.
B2.
Oh, hang on. Yeah, it's going to be a big
Did you think we made the questions easy enough today, Len?
Mate, they were pretty hard, but from a VB state of mind at the moment, I think the VB helped.
Oh, okay.
There might have to be some drug testing.
That's right.
I don't know if that's allowed, Len.
There was no drugs.
We'll be needing one. We'll take a sample anyway, just for the record. Thanks, Len. And yes,
I'll give you a sample of me dogs.
Well, yes. What sort of dogs are we talking about?
We need a sparky.
Don't know what's going on in here at the moment, Len. We're just pressing buttons at random. You've probably done that yourself in your time.
I've tried, yeah.
And guess what? You've got the fabulous Olympic prize pack courtesy Sanyo.
Thank you.
And I'm sure our listeners at home would like to hear the Beasley get dropped onto Boris Yeltsin's liquor cabinet.
Oh, for sure.
Give us the go-ahead.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. Let it go.
Professional bit of work. Oh, there it goes.
Look out.
Well, a job well done. Thanks. Oh, we're getting a wash with vodka. Don't worry, that'll come out in the wash. Thanks very much.
Give me one of those bendy straws.
Thank you.
Hang 10. Thanks, Len.
Thanks
and we'll be
lot.
Back with another week. In fact, the final week of Beat the Beasley from Monday on Martin Malloy. I think Alanis Morissette has finished You Learn, and Martin Malloy has certainly finished for another week. And
learned nothing.
Nothing at all. Len, our winner on Beat the Beasley, I think we successfully managed to make the questions a bit easier.
Mm-hmm. Check. Not a telly out the window.
B1, and the other one would be?
B2.
Okay, you've got...
That's when it went off.
All righty, and thanks for everyone who's helped us with Beat the Beasley, and we're going to have one final week of it from Monday. And by the way, over the weekend, if you fancy a bit of internet-style fun, check out the Martin Malloy website, and Pete Smith, do you have the address for us?
http /martinmalloy.village.com.au.
Oh, I'm sure you've got that down now. I'm sure people were writing it down quickly enough. And there's all sorts of reading material, daggy pictures, and, of course, the Martin Malloy virtual chair to be enjoyed. But let's wind up the week, as we always do, by packing full the Martin Malloy Comedy Incinerator, where we take all the really, really weak gags, we get them out of our system once and for all. I'll kick things off. Start the clock, Gracie. And following his overwhelming victory at the polls, Boris Yeltsin hasn't wasted any time getting back to work. Earlier today, the Russian president's position on nuclear disarmament was clarified, as was the Russian president.
Police and an ambulance crew were called yesterday to free a boy whose head was jammed between two brick walls at his home in Sydney's east. After their attempts to knock the wall down proved fruitless, the boy was eventually freed by a mallet-wielding Paula Yates.
A Californian car rental company reports, and this is true, that amongst the items left by forgetful motorists in rental cars in the last year are nude photographs, sexy underwear, contraceptives, bondage gear, drugs and false body parts. And if Pamela and Tommy would like to collect the items, they're available at reception.
11-year-old Monique Truong was being praised last night after she passed a note under the door of a hotel room where she was being held hostage by a gang of kidnappers. Authorities believe it is the first note to be passed under a hotel door by an 11-year-old girl that wasn't addressed to members of Take That.
And finally, Mick, tragic news from the world of show business. After detecting a pungent smell, neighbours broke into the apartment of that little animated peanut butter Elvis from the TV commercial. But it was too late. Yes, though he'd tried to keep it secret from his friends, he was in fact made from King of Roy peanuts. The makers of the commercial say that peanut butter Elvis will be replaced by a more suitable character, tentatively named Salmonella Fitzgerald. Meanwhile, a shipment of Australian peanut butter bound for Iran was returned to port this week when jars were found to contain traces of Salman Rushdie.
Oh, dear. I think I've broken the incinerator. I think
you've gone too far.
I'm just trying to meet the criteria, and you did.
Okay, well, that must be our cue to sign off. I think it is. And thanks to our guest today, Steve Bedwell, and, of course, all our gladiators, and Len from Beat the Beasley. And we'd also like to thank Boris Yeltsin for that very moving phone call earlier in the show. As always, a big end-of-week salute to our producer, Gracie.
Thank you, Gracie.
Our assistant, Emma.
Emma.
Making the sketches, it's Vicky.
Go, Vic.
All the button pushers, eggheads, and satellite wranglers right around the network grid.
You know who you are.
And, of course, the big man in the glass booth, one Pete Smith.
On you, Petey.
Now, we'll be back Monday, and what an eclectic lineup of guests we've got next week, Mickey. Iron Man Trevor Hendy will be with us. We'll have comedian Russell Gilbert and the architect of lateral thinking, Edward De Bono.
Of course, he's well overdue.
Will he be sticking around for Beat the Beasley?
I'm sure he will.
I hope so. That'll
Beat the De Bono.
Of course. It's a new competition we're getting up, and we'll leave you today with this important message. At last, you can take your old glasses and throw them away.
Aye?
That's right. Thanks to Martin Malloy, you can take those glasses and throw them away.
Yeah?
Yep. Simply throw them away.
Okay.
And don't just throw them away. Grind them into the floor.
All right. Now what?
You've thrown them away?
Yep.
You've ground them into the floor?
Yep.
Well, now you can thank the good folk at Martin Malloy.
I see.
What about those old records and cassettes?
What about them?
Now, thanks to Martin Malloy, you can just throw them away.
Why?
Go on, throw them away.
What, just dump them in the rubbish?
That's right. And while you're there, take that rubbish and throw it away.
It's already thrown away.
Thanks to Martin Malloy.
Wow.
And what about that old couch?
Throw it away?
Throw it away. And is that a brand new stereo television and home entertainment unit?
I don't know. I haven't got my glasses.
Then simply throw it away.
Okay.
What about that old relative staying in the back room?
Uncle Gordon.
Now you can throw him away.
What?
All thanks to your good friends at Martin Malloy.
Right. So, what now?
Sorry?
Well, I've thrown everything away.
Well done. And remember, it's all
yes,
thanks...
Yes, I know, but what am I supposed to do now?
Had it written down here somewhere, but seem to have...
Thrown it away?
Yeah.
Oh, for fuck...
Just calm down. Have a seat on the couch. Sorry, forgot. Oh, here it is. Now you can throw away those old glasses, records, cassettes, couch, TV, stereo, and Uncle Gordon and replace them with the new Martin Malloy Glasso Recordo Coucho TVO Gordomatic 5000. The 12-in-1 stereo TV eyeglasses... couch and irritating relative combination. Here, take it for a test, watch, sit, look, listen, play, and agitate.
Fantastic. I've never seen so clearly, sat so comfortably, enjoyed so much home entertainment choice, and been shat so thoroughly before. Thanks, Martin Malloy.
Martin Malloy, the future is here. Shall I send